General Thomas McInerney with us. General, we're live in Alpharetta, Georgia. We're with Garland Favorito. He's live with us in studio. He's been doing an audit of these Dominion machines, Coffee County, Georgia, Ware County, where the votes that you put in the machine don't spit out the same number of the hand count, and nobody will do anything about it, General. They just sit there, and they're going to do it again in Georgia in this January 5th runoff. General, what is going on? Give us an update, sir.
Well, it's just more cyber warfare, John, as we've talked about before. If they're going to do the same thing, why have an election? We already know the outcome. And so the American people have got to rise up like your two previous callers have been discussing. And as your guest understands this, if they don't change it, we're going to get the same outcome. And that's the direction. That's the direction they're trying to take us in this country. And that's why it's so important that the president still fight what's going on the 3 November election. These are all bundled together. No election in Georgia until they clean it up. And if the people in Georgia do not rise up and the American people rise up, we're going to get the same answer, unfortunately.
General, what should Trump do right now? I mean, the Supreme Court kicked the Texas lawsuit out. We've only got one remaining, and that's Sidney Powell's. Do you think the Supreme Court is going to take it? And if they don't, what are Trump's options here?
Well, let's take if they don't.
Okay.
They were lazy. It's more than lazy. They're perfidious by kicking out the Texas lawsuit for standing. Please, what we have here, when you bundle all this fraudulent voting in each one of the states, you have a major problem, John, with treason. It's high treason what is going on in this country on the leaders who are doing it, not the people that are stuffing ballots. They're doing fraudulent voting. So we have high treason. Now, what should the president do? I believe he's got three cases in front of the Supreme Court now. If they do not take their responsibility, then we should take the following constitutional, John, constitutional actions. He's already done one. On the 20th of November, he executed an executive order declaring a national emergency because of the foreign involvement in the election. That's the Chinese Communist Party. Next, he should institute the Insurrection Act. He should declare martial law. He should set up military tribunals, saying to the judiciary in our country, because you have not done your responsibilities to examine these gross violations, which they haven't even tried to hide anymore, of cyber warfare in both the voting machines from Dominion, as well as with the hammer and scorecard technology that the Obama administration walked away with, that top secret technology. So we're going to need military tribunals. And finally, we're going to have to suspend habeas corpus. Now, why do I say that? Because the president has got to start. We know who these people are. They're the same people that started the Russian collusion issue. They're the same people that started the impeachment telephone call. They're the same people that have done this. Start arresting them. It's so massive, John. It is so massive that people are going to sing. And they're going to sing loud and clear. And once the American people, these actions are taken, once the American people get a very translucent, a very clear picture of what happened in every state, doesn't have to be every state. You can do the top eight battleground states. And you lay that out so the American people can see, and the mainstream media, because it's people like you, the mainstream media is censoring the rest of us, censoring you.
Right.
And you are the lifeblood. And what you are doing, John, is absolutely vital to the nation. I commend you, and I make sure your listeners understand what a vital role you are playing to get the word out. And then once this is clear, how could I, when I came into this on the 1st of November, know all these facts? Is the mainstream media not looking? No, they're not looking. Fox News, for which I worked for 16 and a half years, they've gone blind on us. They have flipped on us. And so the American people have got to know what's going on. For the first time in U.S. history, the former U.S. president, didn't pass the torch. He set up 4 years ago out to destroy his replacement, even before Trump was inaugurated. Now, he created an organization called the Organization for Action, OFA, and he has got 32,525 Marxist and socialist staff members, set up the staff in 50 states. George Soros funded them, $40 million as a start, and more are coming. They are very well organized. They are listening to my conversation with you right now. They have been jamming some of my phone calls and some of my broadcasts. I did one last night. I was jammed on it. We had to go to Skype. This is what we're facing, a very well organized. They did a computer battle plan and to study what they needed to do. And that's when you get like a truck driver driving from New York to Pennsylvania. He's carrying 288,000 ballots. Pennsylvania mails out 1.8 million mail-in ballots. They get back 2.5 million mail-in ballots. And now people are just saying, well, 2.5 people did it. There's 700,000 bogus mail-in ballots. Someone had a printing press. Many of these ballots were printed in China in their involvement. They are all behind this, funding it, owning Dominion. They put $400 million into a shadow company, a holding company that owns Dominion on the 8th of October, a month before the election. So we have a huge problem, and America must wake up. John, you are playing a vital role in helping America wake up. And we're going to get the same answer that we got before in Georgia, because we've got a crooked governor and a crooked secretary of state, and they're Republican. And why are they crooked? I don't know. They either took money in a payoff because they put the Dominion system in quickly, or they, in fact, used the system to win their own election.
John Fredericks, Radio Network, live in Alpharetta, Georgia, 15. We've been here for 6 weeks on the ground. We're with General Thomas McInerney. He's 35 years in the U.S. Air Force. He knows a little bit about this stuff. Mission Special Ops, spent 16 years with Fox News before they decided to kick him out and go in another direction. General McInerney, I've got Gordon Favorita with me. I just want to get him involved here. He's done an analysis of two counties, Coffee County in Georgia and Ware, both of them small counties. When they did the paper ballot count, they fed them into the machines. Multiple times you get a different result that comes out of the machines. And this is only two counties in Georgia. I mean, you have to ask yourself, I mean, how many discrepancies, Garland? Tell the general, you can't get the machines impounded. You can't get the software. You can't get the Secretary of State to even acknowledge what your findings are. Tell them.
Yeah, that's right, John. And then in addition to that, the same software and is used, that's Dominion Democracy Suite 5.5. It's used in Michigan, throughout Michigan, and it's also used in Maricopa County, Arizona. Right. So it calls into question not only multiple counties in Georgia, but multiple states all running the same software. And the guy behind this software promised to make sure that Trump did not win the election. You know, he was identified on a call and making that promise. So it's a situation that's unprecedented. It's an interstate problem now. So maybe the general has some comments he'd like to make on
that. Yeah, and the thing is, General, they do nothing. I mean, the Secretary of State, Raffensperger, here does nothing. And my thing is, I've been here 6 weeks all over the state. I've been in 25 cities since I've been here. So every day I go to another city, talk to different people. And the frustration is, what is going to stop the Democrats from doing this again, from stealing it again on January 5th? And so people are frustrated. They don't want to vote because they're like, they're just going to steal it. My vote doesn't matter. Nobody will do anything about it. And so that's the level of frustration here. And then you look at the fact that they've actually added drop boxes. They registered another 80,000 people in 3 weeks. That's unheard of. Where'd they come from? No one knows. There's no chain of custody. You got machines that don't work, or they spitting out false information, and nobody's doing anything. General, why?
Well, because we are having a major takeover by the leftists in this country. And let me just give you, for example, you know, in most presidential elections, if you get 55% of the population to vote in it, we're not very good at it, you're doing very well. How come 7 of the 8 battleground states had over 100% for the first time in our history?
Right.
Georgia only had 96%. Mm-hmm. Georgia has never had 96%. Mm-hmm. And I'm leading back to what Gordon Favorito said, that the flawed Dominion machines, which is cyber warfare, that's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
The founding fathers didn't understand cyber warfare, but they understood, and that's why the oath of office that I and all people that work for the U.S. government take to support and defend the Constitution of the United States mm-hmm. against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They foresaw that there would be domestic enemies on this country to change this republic, and that's what they're going to do. You can see that in California, New York, and everywhere. You can see it in Georgia. Here you have a Republican that is not changing flawed problems and fraudulent voting machines, and he's not making a move to change it. The legislature should impeach him, and this must be done. Now, that's why I go back to what the president has got to do. He has got to take these and their last-ditch maneuvers, if we've got the Supreme Court of the United States that turns out to be corrupt because we have a corrupt Chief Justice. If that's what it turns out to be, then he's got to take those actions. Military tribunals will solve this. That's why the Founding Fathers put these tools in the Constitution that I have just articulated to everybody. We must take charge here. And once it's laid out, and what you see down there and what Mr. Favorito has talked about is known. Everybody knows this. It's got a brain. And let's examine it and send it out to half to the American population. Half the American population, John, is clueless on what's going on and what went on 3 November, because the mainstream media is complicit in this massive high treason against the United States. And we must rise up. We must wake up. That's why, again, I can't compliment you and Gordon Favorito for what you are doing to alert America to what's going on. Wake up, America. God bless you.
General Thomas McInerney with us. All right, I got a question here. The DNI report is due out on Friday. What do you expect that to have in it, sir?
I expect that he is going to lay out just what you have been talking about for the last 3 weeks that you've been down there, and what other people have been talking about, what I've been talking about, because this is well known. Why the Attorney General did not pick it up, and the FBI, because they came out of being covert. It was too massive. They couldn't keep it covert. And it's so massive that anybody should have been able to find out about it. But we have a deep state in the Attorney General and DOJ, Department of Justice, as well as in the FBI, the people that should be doing this. So that's why you and me and Mr. Favorito and all of us are doing this, because we are doing what's important to the American people. I expect that the DNI is going to clearly lay out all these facts. How could he miss them? How could he miss them? And show the involvement of China, Iran, and other foreign nations, as well as those within the United States that are creating these treasonous acts, because this had to be controlled. It's very centralized. It's very well orchestrated. It is very professional. As I said, they war gamed it. None of this could have been hidden if the DOJ and the FBI were doing their job. They were not. That's why the president put the DNI, put this report in, that he must report to him. I think it's 45 days after the election, whatever it is. It's going to be this Friday, the 18th. And I expect him to lay these facts out in front of the American people.
And so you want the president, when this report comes out, General McInerney, just so I can understand what you're suggesting, you want the president to take unilateral action and employ the Insurrection Act. And just Explain to our audience exactly what that means or what it is, sir.
Well, the Insurrection Act means that the president can take charge for those people that are trying to create an insurrection, seize the government in this country. And that, coupled with martial law, because with martial law, it allows the president to do what should have been done in Seattle, Portland, New York City, Washington, D.C., and all the major cities in the world with Antifa and BLM rising up and creating those riots. Now, that's what's going to happen. They are already primed to rise up when this comes out. And now, with the Insurrection Act and martial law, the president is now authorized to take charge and do what those governors, those Democratic governors, should be doing and are not, to suppress any insurrection. Riots are insurrections. And he can suppress them, and he is in charge. And that's why Secretary of Defense Esper had to go. He didn't understand the Insurrection Act and what was going on around him. Whether he's naive or part of it, I do not know. But what I do know, that the president will crush this, and he'll crush it very quickly.
Well, General, if anyone would know this, you would know it. 35 years in the Air Force. Air Force General spent 16 years at Fox News as a senior analyst. General McInerney, Thomas McInerney, I want to thank you for your input and for being with us, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, General.
We're winning. Sometimes there's blue sky and sometimes there's gray skies, but we're winning. And that's why it's a fight. You know, I'm a big believer. I'm a fighter. I'm a street fighter. But I believe in fights that matter. This is not only a fight that matters. This is maybe the only fight that matters.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here in the studio of War Room Pandemic, sitting down with Steve Bannon. We're going to be talking about what's happening with this election and what's happening with the possibility of a new special prosecutor. Steve, it's real great having you on Crossroads.
Thanks. I'm a huge fan of the Epic Times, NTD, all the guys. You guys do some of the best work around, so you're on a roll.
Appreciate it.
Honored to be here.
Yeah, you do some great work also.
Normally I have Simone Gao, so I'm glad to see that there's more than one face. I'm just kidding. I love your documentary. It just came out. Is extraordinary. We're recommending to not just our audience, which has got to be pretty vast, but for them to share it with their relatives and their friends over the holiday season. People who've just hear the mainstream media say, all the charges here, there's no evidence and it's all baseless. The point we try to make is you don't have to buy the fact the election was stolen, right? But you should see that there's lots of evidence and this is certainly not baseless and has to be adjudicated. I think that's the power of the 90-minute documentary you put together.
I appreciate it, yeah. Now, Steve, I know you've been talking about the idea of a new special prosecutor. First off, why don't you tell us about what you've been discussing on the need for a new special prosecutor.
I think there's twofold. I think that we need two special prosecutors. One, you need a special prosecutor specifically for the election fraud and voter fraud. Not that this can't get worked out, I think, in President Trump's favor by the 20th, which I think will happen. To close the deal that President Trump won this huge landslide, as you kind of show in your documentary. But deeper, you need a real investigative apparatus with subpoena power, the power to indict, panel a grand jury, unlimited budget to go through these states. That needs to be done by a special prosecutor. My recommendation would be Judge Starr. He was the lead witness today at Senator Johnson's hearing on voter fraud. In the Senate, he's got a tremendous reputation, deeply knowledgeable in election law. He was obviously the special prosecutor during Whitewater, and he's the one that brought basically impeachment charges against President Clinton. So this guy is very steeped in what a special prosecutor does. He's also, I think, admired on both sides of the aisle. In addition, and even probably with more urgency, we need to have a special prosecutor, totally separate, assigned to the Biden CCP, Chinese Communist Party's influence peddling, and really compromise of Joe Biden and his entire family over a long period of time. This has to be done immediately. It has to focus initially on the hard drive from hell and the laptop, all the compromising material that's in there about the CCP and Biden. Later, it can expand to Burisma or whatever. But as I've said many times, Russia is a sideshow and Ukraine's a sideshow to a sideshow. This is about the Chinese Communist Party and their essentially buying of influence in Washington, D.C., and in Wall Street and corporate America. This is the most urgent task facing our country. You need a special prosecutor. You need somebody that's beyond the reach in case Biden, in case President Trump can't close this deal by January 20th. You need somebody that's beyond the reach of Biden's, if he was ever to be president, his Justice Department. So this is urgent. I also think that this special prosecutor will be historic in the fact that I think it'll focus initially on Biden's family and their selling of access over many years, and they're really their financial partnership with the Chinese Communist Party. But it will very quickly, I think, metastasize into really looking a formal investigation with subpoena power and the power to indict Chinese Communist Party infiltration of Wall Street, corporate America, our cultural institutions, all of it. So I anticipate that this will be very big. And the president's thinking about this. I mean, it's been reported in Associated Press this morning, broke a huge story, how he's really focused more on really the Biden situation because of the Chinese Communist Party than even the election special prosecutor. So for your audience, you know, we called on the show a month ago, 3 weeks ago, for Barr to be fired. Barr was fired. You're going to see two special prosecutors selected very quickly, I think.
Now, a lot of people would wonder, well, first off, there's the Durham being a special prosecutor now, but this was recently revealed by Barr before he stepped
down. He was only made special prosecutor in the last couple of weeks because there's fear of if this steal stays on and Biden is inaugurated, that Biden's ability to shut it down. Look, I've been very disappointed in the Durham situation. I know a lot of people have. Now, Durham's had all the declassified information about the Russian hoax, all that. I'm extremely disappointed. From what I've heard that many of the main principals have not even had to retain attorneys. They've been brought in for information. So I keep telling people that live in fantasy land that we're all sitting there going, oh, you know, all these people on the right, oh, there's, you know, Durham's going to come in, is going to announce 4,000 indictments, you know, 2 months before, 3 months before the election, and it's all going to be over. I said it's nonsense. He will never show any indictments, if he ever does, until way after the election, way after this matter. So I think Durham's another example of a Department of Justice apparatchik who under Barr, and I thought Barr did a terrible job. He did an okay job on the impeachment, but I didn't think the impeachment was, quite frankly, that difficult. He started to do a pretty good job on CCP, right? But a lot of that, I think, was prodding by President Trump and Mike Pompeo. But Barr stepped up, gave a couple of great speeches. You know, the Justice Department arrested a few underlings, right, to show they had activity. They don't get to the heart of it. Nobody important. It's just like in Casablanca. They rolled up the usual suspects, right? But nothing major. A couple of nice speeches, and I thought it was good. And we pushed that at the time that this guy's heading the right direction. But he clearly admittedly suppressed information about the CCP in the Biden family for many months. First off, they've had the hard drive from hell for a year last week, December 9th. Is when they got the hard drive from hell, and no movement done on it. So that alone, to me, he should have been fired. And by the way, I'm not saying he'll be a target of the special prosecutor, but he's certainly going to be investigated. There needs to be an investigation of the Justice Department about why the hard drive from hell, with all this information, remember the information, as the Epoc Times readers know and NTD viewers know probably better than anybody, the level of detail of the wire transfers, the signed term sheets, the signed engagement letters, the signed joint venture agreements with the worst of the worst of these fake companies that are front organizations for influence peddling and espionage by the Chinese Communist Party, H&A, Anbun Insurance Company, CEFC, the energy trading company, and a cast of just, you know, major Chinese Communist Party intel officers and intelligence assets. He's known this for a long time and suppressed that information and allowed Joe Biden to, on the stage, on the debate. Remember, with the hard drive from hell, we finally got published by the New York Post on the morning of the 14th. The evening of the 14th was the debate with President Trump and Joe Biden. I think it was the first debate. Oh, no, second debate. And Trump turns to Biden right there and talks about the allegations against his son being in business with the Chinese Communist Party taking money. Biden looks the audience in the eye. Global audience says, my son's done nothing wrong. He's never taken a penny from overseas. He has no relationships. All three of those are bald-faced lies. Just bald-faced lies. And Barr did not come out and correct that. He didn't need to say the guy was guilty. He didn't, but he needed to tell the American people that's not actually correct. Actually, there is a formal investigation going on related to information that we got off the hard drive and other information. And he didn't say that. And the reason is now we know it's been leaked in the media that he told people he didn't want subpoenas going out. He didn't want any information going out because he didn't want to upset the elections. That's nonsense. And he must be investigated for that. And I'm really glad he got fired.
Now, when it comes to the Hunter Biden investigations, now, it's a bit of history on this for our viewers, of course. Now, we remember that when this information was coming out, a lot of the big media, a lot of the New York Times, these other publications, they were saying, don't even look at it. It's Russian disinformation. Don't even look at it. They were saying, some of the different outlets are saying, oh, we had these 50-something different former intelligence operatives look at it, and they believe it's Russian disinformation. Now the narrative has totally switched, and these same outlets that were saying that are now saying there's something here. And as you mentioned as well, during the debates, Biden even brought that up and said, oh, well, these different intelligence officials say this is Russian disinformation. Now, what a lot of people might be concerned about is that there's a strategic shift in the narrative, that the media is doing this intentionally. Before the election, they're saying one thing, now they're saying something else, now they think Biden's going to win. And that if he does get removed, we're just going to see Kamala Harris become president. What would you say to people who are worried about
this? I don't
believe
in, the watchword in the that I've lived by and that the war room is, there are no conspiracies, but there's also no coincidences. What I think you're seeing now, let's go back to some of the stuff you said, unpack it, because it's quite important. The most important thing of that is the official intelligence apparatus. And this is why I've been a huge proponent of declassifying all the information around the Russia investigation. I believe Durham has this. He hasn't put it out. I think declassify it all now, get out, because it'll destroy Brennan and Hayden and these guys, as they should be. Because remember, this is the same crowd that for years and years and years did such a terrible job on radical Islamic jihad, but spent all this time on Russia, right? And let's go back in time. They missed 9/11. They absolutely lied and misled the nation and officials about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Just remember, they actually lied and put out false information about Iraq. They have lied consistently in their intelligence reporting about Afghanistan. Washington Post, not Steve Bannon of the War Room, not Epic Times, is Washington Post does that 9-part series that talks about the national security apparatus and the intelligence community, basically lying like they did in Vietnam, lying to the American people. That's why we've been there for 20 years, because we've been winning for 20 years. Every year we're winning. They came out and with this record. And by the way, what's the story they miss? The central thing they miss, this intelligence opera, is the rise of China and the infiltration by the Chinese Communist Party into every aspect of American business, financial, cultural, and political life. Completely not into crickets by the intelligence community over decades. Okay? The greatest existential threat America has ever faced. An existential threat to the Chinese people. A group that has enslaved the Chinese people, one of the great civilizations in the world, has infiltrated all over the world, as we now know from the reports coming out, the leak last week of the 2 million Chinese Communist Party members into some of the most highest security companies in America, defense companies, in our consulate in Shanghai, in the British consulate in Shanghai. You know it from the books of Clive Hamilton, Clive Hamilton's book Hidden Hand that goes through chapter and verse. You know it from Miles Guo. Everybody says crazy Miles Guo. Well, hey, you may think he's crazy. Everything he said has turned out to be true about the infiltration. The people that don't tell you that's our security apparatus. Yet they come out, when this information comes out, and it points directly to Chinese Communist Party compromise of not just Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden's just the guy. He's drinking what the client's drinking. It's Joe Biden and Joe Biden's brother. And their business model is monetization of the high offices that Joe Biden has had. Because this stuff goes back to the Obama administration. Yeah. The apparatus comes out and they put out a form of, not just that, they put their money in and take out an ad in the New York Times. They say, this is all Russian disinformation. That is not a mistake. People make mistakes. That's not a miscalculation. People make miscalculations. That is a bald-faced lie. It is a bald-faced lie to cover for the Chinese Communist Party. You're going to find, when you get to the end of this investigation, the rot in the American national security apparatus and the rot in the American intelligence community and their relationships with the Chinese Communist Party is why this thing has been suppressed. Okay, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's that there are no coincidences. They knew for a fact that this had nothing to do with Russian disinformation. Number one, the Bidens, we have put out, the reason our Twitter account got taken down, we have put out on the War Room Twitter all of the details. We call it the receipts. We put out all the wire transfers. We put out all the signed engagement letters. We put out all the signed joint ventures agreement. We put in all the signed promissory notes. We put out all the equity ownerships, everything out there, because Hunter Biden kept it all. And these are facts. And the Biden family has not come back one time, or any lawyer from them have come back and refuted any document that's been put out, including the other day, Bob Costello put out the email where Hunter Biden's partner saying, you forgot to include $400,000 oops, you forgot to include $400,000 you took from Burisma in your taxes, your tax returns. You better do that 2 years after the fact. And so this is a act of commission, not an act of omission by the intelligence apparatus that is bound and determined to drive Donald Trump and everybody related to Donald Trump out of office and out of access to control of the U.S. government. Why is that? Because Donald Trump was the first person to put America first and to confront the Chinese Communist Party and to single out that China is not our enemy, the Chinese people are not our enemy, but who is the enemy of the Chinese people in the nation of China is the Chinese Communist Party. And that is what you're seeing this. That's why a special prosecutor has to be identified. And this is for the readers of the Epoch Times and the viewers of NTD. History is on our side. We are winning so much right now, because the exposure of what these people have been up to is coming out, and it can't be hidden anymore.
Now, Steve, you and I have, of course, been writing a lot over the years, you talking more about the Chinese Communist Party's system of unrestricted warfare. And a big part of that is political warfare, as you mentioned, and also psychological warfare, changing the narratives. Now, when we talk about the systems for this, they have two main branches, United Front Work Department, Overseas Chinese Affairs Office, which is part of that, and the General Political Department Liaison Department, which I think they might have moved into a different branch now. In other words, a military branch and a government branch dedicated to subverting our system of government and focused mainly on the elites, the
elite capture,
politicians, the academics, the financial movers, and different individuals who can have influence in society, journalists, you name it, targeted, huge-scale, full-time job, run through the consulates, even publicly listed on some of their websites. Now, if you were to talk now about what we're seeing with what's happening now, you mentioned Trump not really being part of that. There was this viral video of Dr. Di Dongsheng, this Chinese professor in China, part of the brain trust of Xi Jinping, the head of the Chinese Communist Party, talking about how the Chinese Communist Party was able to control U.S. politics through the financial industries and the banking industries, and says they were not able to control Trump through that. Of course, you were in the Trump administration for a bit. Was that also what you saw? Would you say this is accurate?
I wouldn't allow it. My portfolio was China. I mean, this is when I came on the campaign in August. One of the things I said, we're not focused on China enough, particularly comparing the globalists of Hillary Clinton to the nationalists and populists of Donald Trump. And it was my number one focus in the administration. And I take a lot of pride in the fact that, at least to get it reoriented, that they're not a competitor. They're not a strategic partner. They're an enemy. Chinese Communist Party is an enemy. Unrestricted warfare is obviously psychological, information, economics. They never want to take us on militarily, right? They understand that we have overwhelming military power, and but they can subvert us much easier, they believe. And here's the reason. It's essentially 5,000 years of the way that they've controlled their own national security affairs. People say, well, China's not an expansionist power. Well, one of the reasons they are an expansionist power geopolitically, maybe not territory-wise, and here's how they do it. It's called tributary states. It's elite capture. Their basic policy is capture of elites. Incentivize elites to be a tributary state, to do what you want them to do, and you will reward them. exponentially. In fact, they'll have more rewards in being part of your system as a tributary state than they would be with their own independence and freedom. It is a direct through line of Chinese national security policy. And what they've essentially done is take the British East India model and just run it in reverse. Okay, it's all about elite capture. And let's be brutally frank. They have captured our elites, a large portion of them. As the professor said the other day, remember, he's also part of the inner think tank for Xi. More importantly, I think the people, they have a Ivy League, called, I think the 9 C's, which are the universities that are the Ivy League equivalents in China. This university that he's essentially the head of is really the cadre school. This is where the apparatchiks are trained. And I think what's most powerful about that video, if anybody hasn't seen it, they have to watch it, is the matter-of-fact way he's laying this out. It's like, this is obviously how we did it. And he's putting it out there in a very conversational manner and very much, oh, by the way. And, of course, he cites some examples. And there's a woman from Wall Street they cite about capture. Yes, absolutely. In the Trump administration, the biggest forces he had to fight were the Chamber of Commerce, were the global corporation CEOs, particularly Wall Street. They all want to be in business with the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, there are no conspiracies, but there are also no coincidences. Let's go back in time. The third week of January in 2017, there are two speeches that are given, one in Davos and one in Washington, D.C. The one in Washington, D.C. will be Donald Trump's inauguration address of January 20th, 2017. A few days before, in Davos at the World Economic Forum, Xi goes and gives a speech, and he's lauded by everybody there, all the Davos men, right? All the top consultants from McKinsey and Booz Allen, the top bankers, the hedge fund managers, the money managers, the commercial bankers, all the media stars, all of Hollywood, they're all in Davos for the winter weekend, the winter festival, where they all meet, right, and all talk about how the future is going to be. The most elitist gathering of the world's financial, business, and political and cultural community that exists. And she gives a speech. His speech is, the globalization project's great. You know, we're the railhead of this. You guys are all kind of tributary states in that, but you're going to make more money than ever. And the only problem we have one problem on the horizon. Populist nationalism. It's a problem, right? It's a problem. You have all the unwashed masses now who are not trained and not elites like you that want to have a say-so. 2 days later, or 3 days later, Donald Trump gives the American Carnage speech. What the American Carnage speech is at its heart is a defense of the Westphalian system, a defense of the nation state. A nation state as a unit that man can get the most freedom in a very imperfect world can have the most freedom possible. So you have the globalization project and you have the nationalist project. Now remember, you pick up the Financial Times of London or you pick up The Economist, you pick up the top papers of the world during that week, Xi is hailed as a global leader, a man of peace, a visionary, right, that has led the world to a good place in this globalization project. Now let's go back. When I talk about consultants and I talk about bankers and hedge fund managers and media and everything like that, all go to Davos. They all do different things, but they're all in one business. That business is the information business, whether it's about trading stocks or about being in media or making corporate moves. They're all in the information business. In fact, these are the smartest guys in the room. They have access to every piece of information in the world. So when she's sitting up there and being lauded as a hero on the cover of The Economist and the front page of the Financial Times and the Times of London, the New York Times, every person there, every participant at that, they know all about the Uyghurs in the concentration camps. They all know about the House Christians. They all know about the organ harvesting. They all know about the suppression of the underground Catholic Church. They all know about the Falun Gong and the torture of the Falun Gong, suppression of the Falun Gong. They all know about the democracy movement. They know about what's going on in Hong Kong. They know everything. They have perfect information on everything, and they don't care. The point people have to understand is that the globalization project does not care. The beating heart, the economic model, and this is not a conspiracy, it's all out in the open. The central part of the apparatus that makes the whole thing work is the slave labor of the people of China. It only works, the model only works if you've enslaved the people of China as slave labor. Because enslaving them as slave labor, underpaid and working these incredible hours in these factories, allow the rest of the world's workers to be serfs. The greatest export that China has and what they want the business model to have is deflation. It's overcapacity of the state-owned industries. It's the way that no prices can rise. It's the way they have higher margins because they keep labor costs down. The slave labor of China goes throughout the world as an export and allows the world's workers, whether they're in India or Western Europe or the United States, never to get pay raises. This was the miracle of Donald Trump to actually get blue-collar workers pay raises. This is the system we have. And who supports that system are the world's elites. Who opposes that system are populist nationalists throughout the world. And who our greatest ally in this crusade, in this effort, are Lao Beijing, or old hundred names in China. Because they understand it's their oppression that makes the system work. And it's their freedom that will actually end up breaking the system. This is what Donald Trump represented. This is why Donald Trump was an existential threat to the globalization project. Now, people say it's tariffs and everything. Yes, they're all aspects of it. But the central part of it was seeing the seeds that were seen in those two speeches. Those are two diametrically opposed ways that the world should be organized. One is based upon hundreds of years of freedom, as imperfect as it's been, right, versus a totalitarian. And here's where we've got all these people saying, oh, they're trying to turn America into socialism, communism. No. The CCP is not a communist organization. That's just all a false front. What it is, it's a combination of state capitalism combined with dictatorial authoritarian rule. Okay? And so that combination, which the Western elites love. You see Tom Friedman and everything, well, if we could just be China for a day, we could solve global warming and we could solve racial injustice, everything like that. They like that model. They admire Xi. They admire Wang Qishan. Yeah, they say there's some problems and everything like that. A report just broke the other day, or Apple TV stopped some story on Gawker. But the real story was people inside of Apple TV says, well, it's not Gawker and these other series that Tim Cook doesn't want to do. The one ironclad law at Apple TV is that you can never criticize the Chinese Communist Party or the official state apparatus in China. And that, to me, is a crime. These tech oligarchs in Silicon Valley are in business with them. Wall Street oligarchs are in business with them. The global corporations are in business with their business partners. That's what's got to be broken. And that's why the heroism and bravery of people like the Epoch Times and the other people that report on this every day and are under constant pressure by the state apparatus of China is nothing short of heroic. And this is the fight of our time. This is what this is all about. Remember, what the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about. Why do we even have this discussion about voter fraud? Why was I going around for months talking about the plan to steal 2020 back in June and July and August? Because of the Chinese Communist Party virus, which your documentary, you know, the documentary that Epoch Times did at NTD Div, what, 8 or 9 months ago, nobody talks about it. The whole reason we have this fiasco of mail-in ballots is because of the Chinese Communist Party virus. The whole reason I do War Room Pandemic, and I've done it since January, when Tony Fauci and guys said, well, there's no pandemic. It's a flu that's in somewhere in central China. I said, no. This is the CCP. This is a major event. This is going to change world history. And today, we're sitting here with a balance sheet in the Federal Reserve that's been completely destroyed, an economy that's crushed, deficits running at trillions of dollars a year. We have no way to think through this because we don't come to grips with the central problem. The central problem is the Chinese Communist Party. They're the ones that either inadvertently allowed it to leak out on a bioweapons lab gain of function or allowed it to be pushed out as a biological weapon. Either way, they must be held accountable, and no Western government today is stepping up and holding them accountable. So this is the great struggle of our times. And one side's going to win and one side's going to lose. And if the Chinese Communist Party continues to capture our elite, whether in the United Kingdom, Western Europe, the United States, if they capture our elite, they will eventually win. And if we don't break that, if we don't break that elite capture, that is the first step to destroying the Chinese Communist Party.
Now, the Chinese Communist Party, in its strategies, and for a lot of Chinese people, they know this. If you went to school in China, you know this, for the most part. They say, strangle you with your own systems. And the idea, one of the ideas of unrestricted warfare, is to manipulate the open nature of foreign countries to gain control of the infrastructures of the institutions, and thereby gain control of the countries. As you mentioned, make them vassal states, essentially. Now, if we understand how this warfare works and what it means to become a vassal state. Now, you mentioned that people say China is not an expansionist country. That's not true, as you know, as well, as you mentioned. They talk about you know, China's 2049 projects. They talk, for example, about their ambitions. They had China 2025 talking about this ambition, the China Dream, they call it. They talk, for example, about what it means to conquer a nation with the China model and the One Belt, One Road Initiative, for example. Now, if we understand what this is, now, it's interesting. I've talked to some Chinese colleagues before, and they say when they hear globalism, you know what they think of? They think the Communist International. Because when they were growing up during the Cold War, that was the narrative being pushed. And they, when they see globalism, they see Communist International, and it's the same exact thing under a different name. Now, Steve, I'm curious, how would we define, in this case, the subjugation of a nation, the creation of vassal states using non-military means?
Well, you're seeing it right now. You're seeing it, let's take the landmass of Eurasia. Remember, they have, people say they're not geographically expansionist. Well, I would actually argue that for the first time, the three great theories of geopolitics, geopolitical expansion, are being inculcated into the basic strategy of the Chinese Communist Party for the first time ever. They've taken Mackinder's, which is he who controls the world island, basically the Eurasian landmass. He who controls the world island, particularly the center of it, controls the world. The second is Mahan's strategy, which was the strategy of the British Empire in the United States. Control the naval choke points. You control the seas, particularly the naval choke points, you will be able to control the world island, and therefore the world. The third is a guy named Speakman, which said, no, the key is the rimland around Asia. If you control that and force people off, you'll control both the interior landmass and you control the oceans. The Chinese Communist Party is the only nation on Earth that's doing all three at one time. Between One Belt, One Road, their naval expansion, and these from Djibouti to all the different choke points, Straits of Malacca, all of it, and then what they're doing to force the United States and the West, Australia, everybody, back off away from the mainland, particularly around the South China Sea, to call it territorial sea, and force the United States back to Guam and in Australia, and these guys back off of the rimland. They are right now, and their partners, remember, North Korea, here's their junior partners, North Korea, Pakistan, Iran, Turkey, and Russia. And right now, Turkey sometimes in, sometimes out. The others are totally captured, okay? Totally elite captured, totally part of the plan, particularly the mullahs being, the most dangerous, but they're all part, and that is their effort to control the Eurasian landmass. Now, American foreign policy boiled down to its essence since August of 1914, the beginning of the First World War, is that, and it was bipartisan. We will never allow either one power or a combination of powers to control the Eurasian landmass, because that essentially is the world island. If you look at a map the way it really should be, or the globe, the Western Hemisphere, everything are islands off of this massive landmass.
Russia's strategy is based on too this whole Duganism strategy. Same thing
about Central Asia and One Belt, One Road, Made in China 2025, and the Huawei rollout. Those three converging big strategies were what was used to make these basically vassal states. Remember, One Belt, One Road was just about elite capture, lending countries money to build infrastructure that united the markets. Remember, the way the Chinese Communist Party thinks of it, China will be the railhead of all advanced manufacturing, right? And they'll do that in Made in China 2025, was to capture 10 or 12 industries between a convergence of advanced chip design, robotics, and artificial intelligence. We don't add the bioengineering part, but that's a very important part also. It was to make markets and access to raw materials and markets and make sure that these countries make enough money that they're in markets for products. And maybe even in the case of Western Europe, you make some component pieces. But essentially, you're in a network effect. His speech in Davos is that we don't need the nation state. What globalism really is a network. It's a network. And China will be the one nation state, but the rest of it will just be a network of kind of these ill-defined geographic units, okay? The Westphalian system is actually a community, a world community of independent nation states, and that's why they're diametrically opposed. But the Chinese and the Chinese Communist Party is well down the road for the first time in the Eurasian landmass, and this is where the Third World War, if we move from the unrestricted or the active war we're in now, both a media, cyber war, an information war and an economic war and, right, quite frankly, a political war. And this is not a Cold War. These are hot wars. If we shifted that to actually a shooting war, which the Chinese don't want because they intend to defeat you before you get to that. They understand that the West is quite good and not only arms manufacturing, the ability to use those in a combined operation, and that our soldiers for thousands of years have been trained in a certain type of military mentality. The Chinese don't want to take that on. But if it does come to that, it will come to places like the South China Sea or up in on the Indian Tibet China border, where you can see these hot flashes right now around the Eurasian landmass. And so this is why we're in very, very difficult territory. This is like the 1930s. The Chinese Communist Party is no different than the rise of the fascists and the Nazis in the 1930s. And places like Hong Kong are really the equivalent of Czechoslovakia. That's where the West has to stand up and you have to draw a line. If you allow free people like in Hong Kong to be rolled up into the system, then nobody's going to stand up to them. Remember, the reason you have a diaspora of the Chinese throughout the world is that the Chinese people want freedom. This is why I said about this election. Military officers that supported Trump said it's the most important election in the United States since the founding of the Republic. But it's also the most important election in 5,000 years of Chinese history. The Chinese people are the only great civilization that the people have never had a day of freedom. You know, maybe during Sun Yat-sen or some time of the Republic, maybe. But for 5,000 years, right, you've had a subjugation of these people. They've never had freedom. And what you see and what the Chinese Communist Party cannot allow to happen is the diaspora where they go to Canada and the United States and Australia and Taiwan and Western Europe, and they thrive and prosper. Look at what the Chinese people have done away from their homeland. It's not that they want to leave China, but they're forced to leave China because opportunities of freedom, democracy, and the rule of law exist in the West right now. And that's where you see the thriving of this community. And that's the great struggle. The Chinese Communist Party cannot allow that to happen. These people either have to be hunted down and suppressed, whether it's the Falun Gong or the democracy movement or the underground Christians, they have to be hunted down and suppressed throughout the world. And what they cannot allow is places like Hong Kong and Taiwan to prosper for the world to see, hey, look at Hong Kong. Hong Kong, look at what the Chinese people have done on a rock to build the world's third greatest capital market with freedom and the rule of law. The Chinese Communist Party cannot allow that. And that is why you see the weakness. If you want to see elite capture, look at the weak-willed counter to what happened in Hong Kong. The West should have stood united, led by Great Britain, quite frankly, because it's a former British Crown colony, and they actually took a deal that the whole world supported because Margaret Thatcher and the British negotiated, and they allowed it to be torn up and thrown in people's faces and spit on it and suppress the people in Hong Kong. The British... So you want to look at the decline of Britain, look at nothing more than what happened in Hong Kong and the failure of Great Britain to stand up. And I put the United States, President Trump, I thought if you look at his total confrontation with the Chinese Communist Party, by far the weakest aspect of this was the confrontation in Hong Kong, which we should have and will rue the day that we did not stop back in 2019 what happened to the people of Hong Kong to stop this at its birth and to let the Chinese Communist Party know, no, you do not have a free pass to subjugate free Chinese throughout the world. You know, President Trump won on November 3rd. I strongly believe to 99% we're going to close on that victory. We'll have a second term starting on January 20th. But in that chance that Biden somehow does be able to steal this, people should understand that we are spending 20 hours a day to make sure that there is a total inability of Biden and his people around him to be able to reverse the great movement we've made and actually the confrontation of the Chinese Communist Party that's going on right now. This is the existential threat. This is what 100 years from now, this is what people are going to remember. What they're going to remember right now, President Trump's first term, and I've told him, they're going to remember one thing. It's not going to be the impeachment. It's not going to be all this Russian nonsense. It's not going to be your tax cut. It's going to be that you were the individual stood up for the first time as a leader of the United States and confronted the Chinese Communist Party. As imperfect as that confrontation was, and I realize it was imperfect, that was a sea change, and it will be discussed 100 years from now. People, your viewers should understand, we're going to win this. There's no doubt we're going to win this. And why are we going to win this? We're going to win this because we have the greatest ally we could possibly have in this fight, and that's the Chinese people, Lao Beijing. Every day of my life, I work on one project. The combination of the deplorables and Lao Beijing. Because they have a, I come from Lao Beijing of America. I come from a working class, blue collar family of little guys. Everybody in my family is a little guy, right? They're just the cogs in the wheel, right? Now they're happy cogs in the wheel, and that's the way a society, a civic society, should be structured. The Lao Beijing, old hundred names, the working men and women in China are our greatest ally to basically take down the Chinese Communist Party. It's actually the defining event of the first half of the 21st century will be the freedom of the Chinese people and how they achieve it. Only the Chinese people can get their freedom. We are here to assist. And if we assist and have their back, right, in every aspect of this global conflict, Chinese people will eventually overthrow the Chinese Communist Party and install a government they want that has the rule of law and democracy and everything that they have prospered in the West under. And so that is the great challenge for us today. And one of the things I think is the reason this show, The War Room, has gotten such a massive international audience is we speak to both audiences and we speak to them as one group, that the system is stacked against you for the benefit of the elites that control that system, right? And this is a very, you can think it through, you can walk through the math, you can walk through the economics, you walk through the geopolitics, and it's quite evident at the end of it. And most importantly, they get it. It's not like they have to, have to go through some long lecture. I tell people, when I was out in Ohio and see President Trump, we had these speeches. If he goes to Ohio or Michigan or Pennsylvania, he can start talking about China and the deindustrialization of America and the Chinese Communist Party, you know, working with Wall Street to take the factories away. He doesn't need a big explanation. They intuitively know what's going on and respond in a very strong manner, positively, to that message. If you go to New York or go to Washington, D.C., people look like you got two heads. What are you talking about? Aren't they our partners? Aren't they they're strategic competitors now. That's a new buzzword that they want to. Oh, they're strategic competitors. No, they're not strategic competitors. They're an enemy. They're an enemy of their own people. They're an enemy of the people of the United States. And most importantly, and this is shown by the CCP virus and their activities, they are a threat to all mankind. Okay, they only care about their own rule. The people they care least about on earth are the Chinese people. And that is our greatest asset in their destruction, is the partnership with the Chinese people. And people should understand we're winning. I'm not going to say it's going to happen tomorrow, but we're winning. And ultimately, the Chinese people are going to be free by their own hand. And I consider it an honor to be a small part of the assistance of the Chinese people in their effort.
Now, Steve, got just last question. In terms of this global battle we've talked about, now at Epoch Times we talked about it as freedom versus socialism. You could also define it as, frankly, good versus evil, and tyranny versus freedom, right, in other ways. How would you define this global battle that the world is in right now, and how does this relate to the election?
I think this was what part of the election was about, the CCP virus. Gave the Democrats and the progressive left an opportunity to try to steal this. But this when you boil it down, it's between the Alliance of Liberty and people that want to breathe the clean, fresh air of freedom with all the responsibilities and all the downside that comes with that versus a totalitarian system that's both a combination of the worst elements of state capitalism and the worst elements of a totalitarian model. There's no better representative of that than the diaspora of the Chinese people. I say, hey, look at the United States, look at China, look at Canada, look at England, look in Western Europe, look in Australia, look at all over the world. Where the Chinese people have access to the rule of law, democracy, and freedom, they prosper. They're among your best citizens. They're family oriented, they're hardworking, they're achievement oriented, they believe in meritocracy. They're everything you want in a democracy, in a republic. In a country about a good citizen, the citizen that focuses on their own household and how they make things better and how they make things better for the community. So the way I define this, it is good and evil. It's quite Manichaean. The Chinese Communist Party is rotten to its core because it instills all the worst elements that freedom-loving people have fought for millennia against. The total absolute control by a small group of elites that don't allow any rights at all to anybody else. and only look at those as basically units of production to get their benefit of what they have. And this is why this election was about the outcome. It was the most important election in 5,000 years of Chinese history. And it's why the Chinese people, as great a civilization that it is, that the Chinese people, Lao Beijing, have not had a day of freedom in, what, 5 or 10,000 years? No other civilization on earth is like that. And here you have, I would argue, one of the greatest civilizations that is incorporates, I think, some of the greatest people on earth. And they've proven that as they've gotten out to the West and other areas and had the opportunity to have live under the rule of law, that it is absolutely a shocking crime. And I think the biggest criminals in this are not simply the Chinese Communist Party. I think it's their benefactors and their partners in the West who should know better. It is Wall Street. Remember, these are not people that don't know the information. Go back to the business logic of the Party of Davos, or the World Economic Forum, of this gathering in Davos that just represents the system throughout the world. They're in the information business. They are the smartest people in the room. They went to all the Ivy League schools. I went to Georgetown in the School of Foreign Service. I went to Harvard Business School. I worked at Goldman Sachs. I've been in those boardrooms. I see how these people think. I know their access to information. It's not that they don't know what's going on. They absolutely know. And if I can make a last thing about how it's going to come down, I want to refer back to a movie. There's a film that was made back in the 1990s with Kevin Costner and Sean Connery about Elliot Ness. It's called The Untouchables. It was about the era of gangsterism in Chicago in the 1920s during Prohibition. And Sean Connery played an old Irish cop, and Kevin Costner was a young investigator. And they were going up against Al Capone and the worst mafia like the Chinese Communist Party, in Chicago in the 1920s. And Sean Connery turned to Elliot Ness kind of run around and says, hang on, you got to understand something. Everybody knows where the whiskey is. Everybody knows where the stills are. Everybody knows where they make it. It's not that we know where it is. It's do we have the political will to walk across the street and take an axe and beat down the door and stop it? That's the only thing we have. It's the only thing that's holding us back. This will end like that if we have that, if you have the political will and courage. That's essentially where we are today. Everybody on earth knows what the Chinese Communist Party stands for. Everybody on earth, and including the Muslim nations that are all their partners, understand what they've done to the Uyghurs in the concentration camps. Everybody knows what they've done with the organ harvesting. Everybody knows what they've done to underground house Christians. Everybody knows the suppression, what Cardinal Zen has pointed out, that the Vatican's in business with the suppression of the underground Catholic Church. Everybody knows about the torture and the suppression of the Falun Gong. Everybody knows what they've done to the democracy movement. Everybody knows how they go through and out the world and hunt down free Chinese that are making an impact and standing up to them on a worldwide basis. Every elite, every newspaper, every TV show, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Times of London, the Financial Times, the Economist, they all know. This is not about information. It's not about, no, I didn't know that. I didn't know. Yes, they all know. Wall Street knows. The corporations know. They kowtow to it. They know. The only question we have is, do we have the political will to stop it? And the political will come from the populist movement. It will come from the deplorables, and it'll come from Lao Beijing. Eventually, when those two groups get a belly full of it and say, we will not allow this to continue, is when dramatic change is going to happen. And that's going to be the fall of the Chinese Communist Party and the holding accountable that everybody that was their partners and everybody made money with them and everybody that stole wealth from the Chinese people. That day of reckoning is coming, and that day of accountability that's going to come on the day after that is coming. And people should understand we're winning. Sometimes there's blue sky, and sometimes there's gray skies, but we're winning. And that's why it's a fight. You know, I'm a big believer. I'm a fighter. I'm a street fighter, but I believe in fights that matter. This is not only a fight that matters. This is maybe the only fight that matters when you take it at that level. And so I'm honored to be able to do this every day of my life.
Hey, Steve Bannon, real pleasure having you.
Thanks, Joshua.